Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we open with some big stories from the East Coast. On our Capitol Report, hear about a bill passed by the House of Representatives that would ban abortions after 20 weeks, even for severe birth defects or to save the life of a mother. We'll also have the latest news on a troubling train crash in Philadelphia, including emerging evidence to suggest that it may not have been an accident. Residents in the Helix Water District may soon be paying hefty fines for heavy water use, and we'll have details on today's show. Plus, we'll have the latest on Park Station, that controversial high-rise that's coming before the La Mesa Planning Commission again this week for the third time. Hear why oak trees are being cut down at a popular park in Ramona, and learn just how much rain the weekend storm brought to our region. Women on 20s has announced the winner of a nationwide vote to recommend a woman to honor on the $20 bill, and we'll have details on who that winner is. We've got good news today for veterans and their families seeking an education, thanks to some changes in the rules governing the GI Bill. We also have a warning from the sheriff about a prisoner who has escaped from the Otay Mesa detention facility wearing a prison work uniform. On Tribal Beat, hear about an energy award that the Pala tribe has received. Plus, hear why cigarette taxes may soon be going up in California. Congresswoman Loretta Sanchez is the latest candidate to announce that she is running for the California Senate seat, and we'll have details. And then on Green Scene, hear about one company's efforts to recycle plastics from the ocean. Here in East County, we have news about a bridge that's been renamed in Hakumba to honor a fallen Border Patrol agent. And on the second half of our show, our newsmaker interview today is with Cindy Buxton, a leading environmentalist. We'll be talking about a victory in getting the county to clean up dirt dumping by road crews in Cleveland National Forest along an area recommended for wilderness designation. And it all came about thanks to an East County Magazine special investigation. We'll also tell you about a plane that struck a truck while making an emergency landing in Santee. And we'll have tips on wildfire safety for you today. Plus, we'll have some oldies but goodies, a Sounds of History feature on the Calvert Motor Transport Museum in Campo, and a reel-to-reel interview with a local band, Look Up Here. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. The House of Representatives has passed a bill to ban virtually all abortions after 20 weeks. The bill does have an exception, but only for rape victims after a 48-hour waiting period. The measure is alarming to many health officials because a 20-hour ultrasound is typically when serious birth defects show up, such as spina bifida or split spine, hydrocephalus, fluid in the brain, anencephaly, missing parts of the skull, as well as major heart and organ defects. Under the measure, women would be forced to carry such pregnancies to term. Supporters of the bill contend that a fetus feels pain after 20 weeks and thus no abortions should be allowed after that time period. But the authors make no allowances for the painful treatments that children born with such serious defects must undergo. For example, an acquaintance of mine gave birth to a child with a hole in the heart and organs growing outside the body. Despite multiple painful surgical procedures on the day that it was born, the infant died one day later. Might an abortion have been the lesser of two evils in such a case? There are also no exceptions for a woman's health, so a mother who already has several children could not get an abortion after 20 weeks, even if she develops diabetes, high blood pressure, preeclampsia, or another life-threatening condition. If she develops cancer and needs chemotherapy to save her life, she would be out of luck, as this cannot be done when a woman is pregnant. The bill also takes away the choice of a family to save a mother's life instead of a fetus in such cases. The measure passed with only Republican votes, 242 to 184. No Democrat voted in favor, though four Republicans did vote against. Locally, San Diego's congressional delegation split down party lines. The measure is unlikely to become law because President Barack Obama has indicated he would veto it. But if a Republican wins the presidential race, the reproductive freedoms of women could be erased. Some critics contend that the measure is unconstitutional, violating terms laid out in the U.S. Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision. That case held that abortions in the second trimester should be allowed in consultation with a physician for legitimate medical reasons such as birth defects, health, or life of the mother.
What caused an Amtrak passenger train bound for New York City from Washington, D.C. to derail in Philadelphia's Port Richmond neighborhood, killing 8 passengers and injuring 200 people? Reuters reports that the train may have been struck by a bullet, rock, or other projectile shortly before the crash. The FBI has been called in to examine a round hole in the windshield, a National Transportation Safety Board inspector told Reuters. 2 other trains are also believed to have been struck by projectiles in the vicinity. The engineer survived the crash but has suffered a concussion and memory loss. It is unknown why the train sped up prior to the crash. The train had been sped up to 106 miles per hour in an 80 mile per hour zone going into a curve 1 minute before the deadly crash. The speed limit in the curve is 50 miles per hour. The engineer, Brandon Bostian, did apply the emergency brake, but not in time to stop the locomotive and all 7 cars from leaving the track, with several cars flipping onto their sides. A safety system called positive train control that could have prevented the crash had been installed on the tracks but was not yet operational due to the budget shortfalls and right-of-way disputes. Had it been operational, the system could have controlled the train speed automatically. National Transportation Safety Board member Robert Sumwalt has said that if the system was operational in that section of track, the accident would not have occurred. Ironically, one day after the fatal crash, the Republican-controlled House Appropriations Committee in Congress passed a bill to cut $260 million from Amtrak's budget, drawing criticism from Democrats for jeopardizing public safety. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Helix Water District's board is considering tough enforcement of mandatory water cuts. On May 20th, the board will vote on a plan that would fine homeowners up to $500 a month for heavy water usage amid the drought if they fail to take steps to conserve. Unlike some water districts, Helix makes no allowances for family size or property size, expecting households with large families or larger lots to somehow use the same amount of water as a single individual on a small lot, a point that has rankled many consumers in the district. Governor Brown has ordered mandatory 25% water cuts statewide. The plan takes into account districts that have previously made strides in conserving water. So Helix must cut its water use by 20% starting June 1st through February 1st of next year. The district has been in a Level 2 drought alert since August 2014. Its customers have cut water use by 6%, despite a 22% reduction in water supply during that period, and now another 20% must be cut. To achieve this, the district is proposing increased public outreach and education, restrictions and enforcement, as well as drought penalties. The district already has used a wide variety of communication to the public, including TV and radio ads, newsletters, web articles, and more. Helix also plans to conduct classes and workshops. Next up, customers will need to limit outdoor water use to 2 days a week instead of 3 days. Customers will receive a courtesy letter if they've been in violation and increased their water use. Customers will need to respond within 2 weeks of receiving the letter, or a violation notice will be sent. Customers can be assessed up to $100 for the first violation, $200 for a second violation, and $500 for each additional violation added to the customer's bill. The penalty would only be for Tier 3, the highest use water category for residential customers, and it will apply only to outdoor water use. The district is also hiring an additional temporary full-time water conservation specialist to help with drought efforts. At a meeting last week, members of the public voiced frustration. Rick Sparhawk claimed the tiered rates are unconstitutional. Marty Ornish told the board it is unfair to property owners who have already cut back on water use, adding that she already takes short military-style showers, washes dishes in a tub, and dumps her leftover dishwater on plants. She said, "The result of everybody cutting back in my neighborhood is dead trees. I think this so-called penalty is a tax," she added, "and not a good way to change behavior." Barry Rosenblatt mentioned he got a letter from the district saying he overused his water. He said he tried reaching the district several times without success. Sandra Tuttle, a teacher, noted that landscaping is important for fire safety. She said, "Dead weeds don't make good fire barriers. Those who have large properties need not be kept at the same standard. Many of us have 1/2 to 2 acres of property. Can we please have a break on Tier 3? Lisa Stoya, Director of Administrative Services for the district, told the public to do what you can to preserve trees, but she offered no advice on just how to accomplish that while slashing water use on properties with orchards, for example. A legal advisor for the district insisted that tier rates are not unconstitutional due to Prop 218. Directors Joel Scalziti and Kathleen Coates-Hedberg both spoke against penalizing Tier 3 customers, and Hedberg said if there's to be a penalty, it ought to be shared among users in all tiers. Ultimately, however, the board voted to have staff recommend a 10% penalty, though Director Chuck Muse called for an even higher 14% penalty. Final board action will be taken at the May 20th meeting at 2 p.m. at the Helix Water District headquarters in La Mesa. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Park Station, the controversial high-rise proposed in La Mesa, will come before the city's Planning Commission on May 20th at 7 p.m. in the City Council chambers. This will be the third hearing since the application was first submitted in 2008. The first time it was rejected by planners on the basis of height and density, which were far in excess of city requirements. The second time, everyone, including the applicant, was stunned when the American Legion Hall withdrew its application during the hearing, requiring owner Kitzman to come up with a new plan. A staff report sums up the difference between current zoning, the 2014 proposed, and the current one. While not taking any specific position on its recommendations, the conclusions of the report draws attention to key areas of concern for the commission. These include the application's request for a by-right approval of increased density, increased building height, adding a hotel-motel, and reducing parking without the normal opportunity for community input and approval. The report states, approval of the Park Station-specific plan would waive the city's authority to review a special permit for increased building height and preempt the city's ability to place appropriate conditions on a conditional use permit for a future hotel-motel use. If planners reject the proposal yet again, the builders have the option of taking their case directly to the City Council, and with 3 newly elected council members, the future of Park Station Project and the quaint historic village character of downtown La Mesa remains uncertain. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
A voracious insect has devastated oak trees that once formed a canopy shading visitors at Dos Picos Park in Ramona. In recent months, over 100 mature oaks in the park have been cut down after they were killed by the gold-spotted oak borer, and more are slated to be felled, some of them up to 200 years old. Drought left the trees weakened, making them susceptible to the destructive insect pest. The dead trees had to be removed to protect the safety of visitors from falling limbs, UT San Diego reports. Gold-spotted beetles first appeared in San Diego County in 2004. By 2010, they had killed tens of thousands of trees countywide. Campers can help prevent the spread of the beetle by not moving firewood from one place to another, authorities say. The park is treating beetle-free trees with an insecticide in hopes of protecting them. In addition, young oaks will be planted along with faster-growing native trees such as sycamores. Although it will take decades for the oaks to mature, the sycamores should be large enough to provide shade in just a few years, though the park won't be the same without its canopy of heritage oaks. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with a weather report from East County Magazine. The storm that doused our region in recent days brought some welcome drought relief. According to the National Weather Service, so far in May, 2.35 inches have fallen in San Diego, making this the second wettest May in our region's history and the wettest since 1921, and we still have half a month to go. The storm caused some flooding in Mission Valley and hassles for motorists, but overall the drenching came as welcome relief amid a 4-year drought. A full 2 inches fell at Lake Cuyamaca, but the storm cleared just in time for weekend activities, including Ramona's parade and rodeo. As for the rest of the week, partially cloudy skies are forecast with a 10% chance of rain through Wednesday.
A group that wants to kick Andrew Jackson off the $20 bill and replace him with a woman has, after months of collecting votes, chosen a successor, Harriet Tubman. Tubman was the choice of hundreds of thousands of voters nationwide in an online poll conducted by Women on 20s that started with 15 worthy candidates. They narrowed it to four finalists, who included Tubman as well as former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, civil rights activist Rosa Parks, and Wilma Mankiller, chief of the Cherokee Nation. Tubman risked her life many times to save others as a conductor on the Underground Railroad, leading slaves to freedom in the North. If she winds up replacing Jackson on the $20 bill, there would be a certain poetic justice. Jackson was a slave owner who made his fortune on slave labor. He also caused the deaths of many Native Americans by ordering the forced removal of Cherokees from their native lands in what became known as the Trail of Tears. His primary accomplishment came during the War of 1812, when he did win a decisive victory against British invaders in the Battle of New Orleans, later becoming President of the United States. But in a more enlightened era, many Americans now agree that it is time to move past an era in which slave owners and perpetrators of genocide were honored, turning the pages in our history books to find positive examples of justice instead. Most importantly, Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill in place of Andrew Jackson would make a statement about our values. After Tubman escaped from slavery that she was born into herself in Maryland, Tubman returned to the South at great risk to herself. Over and over again, she made 19 trips to the South, rescuing 300 slaves from captivity, including her parents. She reportedly had a perfect record as a conductor for the Underground Railroad. During the Civil War, Tubman also worked for the Union Army, at first as a cook and a nurse. She was recruited to work as a spy for the Union Army. As the Smithsonian Magazine wrote, Tubman became the first woman in U.S. history to lead a military expedition when, in 1863, she led a brigade of Union soldiers to free over 750 slaves. Despite all of this, Tubman struggled to receive any compensation from the government for her time serving the Union. She successfully petitioned Congress for a raise on the pension she received for the service of her second husband, initially $8 a month to $25 a month, and yet she never received a pension for her own considerable military service. In a White House press briefing last Tuesday, Press Secretary Josh Earnest said that Tubman was a wonderful choice to be honored on our currency, but he stopped short of saying whether the president backs putting Tubman on the $20 bill. Hillary Clinton tweeted, "Harriet Tubman could be the first woman on the $20 bill. Awesome, well-deserved, and about time." The Women on 20s campaign aimed to change the portrait on the $20 bill for the 100th anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment granting women the right to vote in 2020. If the government agrees that it's time to replace Andrew Jackson on the bill, its choice might not end up being Tubman, but the idea of putting a woman on America's paper currency has attracted some notable support. In a July speech in Kansas City, before the launch of the Women on 20s voting campaign, President Barack Obama stated, "Last week a young girl wrote to me to ask why there aren't any women on our currency, and then she gave me a long list of possible women to put on our dollar bills and quarters and stuff, which I thought was a pretty good idea." Although the Women on 20s campaign plans to petition the White House, it actually is the Treasury Department that ultimately makes decisions on which bills feature which portraits. The last overhaul of paper money portraits by the department was in the 1920s, when Jackson replaced Grover Cleveland on the $20 bill. Women on 20s Executive Director Susan Aid Stone concluded in an emailed statement, "Our paper bills are like pocket monuments to great figures in our history. Our work won't be done until we're holding a Harriet $20 bill in our hands in time for the centennial of women's suffrage in 2020. For more information, you can visit womenon20s.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Leon Thompson with some good news for California veterans and family members seeking an education. The United States Department of Veterans Affairs has announced that all veterans and dependents using the GI Bill benefits shall receive temporary in-state tuition status through the end of the year, regardless of their state of residence. Keith Boylan, CalVets Deputy Secretary for Veterans Services, says the action ensures that students using GI benefits in California are able to continue training at their chosen institutions and receive in-state tuition status. The policy impacts veterans and dependents who enroll in all institutions within 3 years of the veteran's qualifying discharge. Bob McDonald is Secretary of Veterans Affairs. He states, Our military members and their families make sacrifices that require them to pack up and move with little notice. They shouldn't be penalized after they leave military service by burdensome residency requirements. This waiver will allow students to continue receiving the GI Bill benefits they've earned as states work to comply with this important law. A list of states that are in compliance is posted on the GI Bill website. VA will update the list as more states become compliant. The resident rate provisions of the CHOICE Act generally cover veterans as well as their spouses and children who live in the state where they are attending school who are enrolled within the 3 years of the veteran's qualifying discharge. To remain approved by the VA, schools must charge tuition and fees at the resident rate to those covered individuals.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report from East County Magazine. The sheriff is seeking an inmate who escaped from the East Mesa Reentry Facility in Otay Mesa Saturday and was found missing at 1 p.m. Omar Ramirez Sandoval was an inmate worker at the facility who was last observed about 7 in the morning. He was being held for possession, sale, and transportation of narcotics and sentenced to 9 years in prison. Deportation proceedings were pending. Sandoval, a 37-year-old Hispanic man, was wearing a tan and white worker uniform with SD jail markings on it. He is 5'8" tall, weighs 180 pounds, has black hair and brown eyes. He was clean-shaven with short, crew-cut hair when last seen. The method of his escape remains under investigation, says Sergeant Chris Davis with the San Diego Fugitive Task Force. Anyone with information about the whereabouts of Omar Ramirez Sandoval can call the Sheriff's Department non-emergency line at 858-565-5200. You can also remain anonymous and be eligible for up to a $1,000 reward for information leading to his arrest by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
San Diego Gas and Electric Company has presented a check for over $1.2 million to the Pala Band of Mission Indians and Pala Casino Spa and Resort for installing energy-efficient equipment. The loan is the largest ever funded through SDG&E's on-bill financing and energy efficiency business rebates and incentives programs. SDG&E estimates that the improvements will save Pala nearly $250,000 in electric costs every year. The loan period will last just over 4 years, and funds will be repaid from the energy cost savings produced by the equipment. Government-funded customers such as Pala are eligible to finance projects that meet the payback period of up to 10 years. Given the project size, it is estimated that it will be paid back in less than 3.5 years. On-bill financing has helped over 1,400 non-residential customers since the utility pioneered the program back in 2007. Over $46 million in energy efficiency equipment has been financed through the program, which lends funds to commercial, non-residential customers in good standing with the utility to purchase qualifying equipment with no money down and no interest payments. To learn more about on-bill financing, visit sdge.com/BUSIN. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The price of cigarettes could go up by $2 a pack if two new ballot initiatives are approved next year. The Save Lives California Coalition just filed papers with the state attorney general to ask voters to hike taxes on traditional tobacco products and on e-cigarettes in 2016. They estimate it'd raise $1.5 billion in the first year, money that would be used to expand access to Medi-Cal, fund research into smoking-related diseases, and improve anti-smoking efforts. Kimberly Amazine from the American Lung Association California says tobacco companies spent heavily to defeat similar ballot measures in 2006 and 2012.
California has not increased its tobacco tax since 1998. We're currently at 87 cents per pack, which ranks 33rd in the nation for tobacco taxes.
Supporters are also going the legislative route, pushing for several similar bills currently under consideration in Sacramento. The Save Lives California Coalition includes, among others, the American Heart Association, the American Lung Association, the American Cancer Society, and the California Medical Association. Opponents say tobacco taxes disproportionately affect low-income residents. Amazine says raising the price encourages people to make better choices.
Increasing the cost of tobacco is widely recognized as the most effective way to reduce smoking across California, especially with our young people. Just by raising the tax alone, it will keep kids today from trying their first cigarette.
Supporters claim that over the past 20 years, anti-smoking programs have prevented 1 million deaths and saved taxpayers $134 billion in health care costs. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Congresswoman Loretta Sanchez, a Democrat from Santa Ana, has announced she will challenge Attorney General Kamala Harris for the California Senate seat being vacated by Barbara Boxer's retirement. Sanchez, who is from Orange County, is a member of the party's Blue Dog Caucus of moderates and conservative Democrats, though she voted with former Speaker Nancy Pelosi over 90% of the time and is regarded as liberal on social issues such as gay rights and abortion. She has voted against fast-tracking procedures for international trade pact approvals. The daughter of Mexican immigrants, she serves on the House Armed Services Committee, the Committee on Homeland Security, and the Joint Economic Committee. At the state Democratic convention in Anaheim this week, Sanchez touted her legislative experience, which Harris, a former district attorney from San Francisco, lacks. She also faulted Harris for lacking experience in foreign relations, military, and homeland security issues. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report. Plastic poses a major hazard to our oceans and to marine life. There are nearly 270 million tons of plastic in the world's oceans. Each year, as many as 135,000 whales become entangled in plastic debris, according to the World Society for the Protection of Animals. Other animals, such as turtles, fish, and birds, can also become entangled or ingest the plastic, which enters the food chain and affects us all. But now Adidas, a global maker of athletic clothing and shoes, has announced it will be collecting plastic trash from the ocean and recycling it into wearable items for consumers. The company is partnering with Parley, which aims to collect 10,000 tons of plastic this year from coastlines around the world. The solution isn't perfect. Such garments can shed fibers during washing that ultimately wind up washed back out to sea. But Adidas's commitment to cleaning up the seas has another benefit, providing a platform to educate consumers around the world about the problems caused by ocean plastic and the need to use alternative materials wherever possible.
Amber alerts have been activated 240 times in California in the last 13 years, alerting people statewide about 298 missing children. The system has been extremely effective, since 290 of those children, all but 8 of them, have been found safely, better than a 90% success rate. 4 children are still missing, and 4 were killed, UT San Diego reported. The system has worked 8 times to recover kidnapped children right here in San Diego County. Besides those flashing freeway signs, Amber Alerts are now sent via email, cell phones, and posts on social media sites. Next up, there's a plan to develop a special signal for cell phones similar to a warning sound used to alert people to wildfires, floods, tornadoes, or other emergencies. Two of the dramatic success stories of the Amber Alert system had ties to San Diego's East County. The kidnapping of Lakeside teenager Hannah Anderson triggered an Amber Alert in 5 states, the largest ever, leading to her rescue from kidnapper James DiMaggio, who had murdered her mother and brother. The other high-profile case occurred last year on an on-ramp to Highway 52 in Santee, where a man who had killed his wife and kidnapped their 4 sons was spotted. He tried to leap to his death over the side, but police managed to stop him with a beanbag gun and save all 4 of the children. You can sign up to be on the Amber Alert list at amberalert.gov. The alert you share with your friends just may save a life. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A bridge over Interstate 8 near Hakumba has been renamed to honor Eric Norman Cabral, a Border Patrol agent who died of a heart attack caused by heat exhaustion suffered while tracking a group of suspected undocumented immigrants in the area. He was found unresponsive and flown to a local hospital where he later died. He was 31 years old. His untimely death points up the risk facing those who patrol our borders in often extreme weather conditions. His family asked Assemblyman Brian Jones to introduce legislation to name the bridge in Agent Cabral's honor. That measure was signed into law by Governor Jerry Brown. A ceremony was held May 15th to unveil the new freeway bridge signs with representatives from the Border Patrol, the Border Patrol Union, and Assemblyman Jones present to honor the memory of Agent Cabral. This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. And today, we have a victory to report. East County Magazine started an investigation into dumping of dirt along Boulder Creek Road in the proposed Eagle Creek Wilderness area inside Cleveland National Forest, and now the county has begun a major cleanup as a result. The whole thing started with a video posted on Facebook by the Eagle Peak Friends and Collaborators, which documented these massive quantities of dirt. And this was brought to our attention by Cindy Buxton, who is my very special guest today. Cindy was formerly the forest chair for the Sierra Club San Diego, and she's a leading environmental voice here in East County. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Miriam.
Tell us about this dirt. What was the dirt being dumped there for?
It was brought out there. We started seeing this after the Witch Fire. I think it was to help fix the roads after that. They would get very quickly rutted and washboarded, and this is difficult for the local people out there to get to work in the morning, of course.
And it's been going along then since 2007 when those fires began. And you mentioned it's been getting worse lately.
Yes, we started seeing more and more. They would dump the dirt, spread it on the road, grade it out. The rains would come. It would wash. One of the locals would call and call and call, and eventually they would bring more dirt, and it would rain, and it would wash away.
Yeah, and you sent us photos of this. We're talking about 20,000 cubic yards of dirt estimated, and in places it was obstructing views. You couldn't even see the mountains in some of these areas.
I looked up on the internet to see what 100 cubic yards looked like, and I had to kind of guess over the last several years how much that is, and that's probably kind of a conservative guess, but it's a lot. Stretched out between mile 6 and mile 14 and a half out there on Boulder Creek Road.
Now, this dirt was washing down and polluting a federally protected watershed in the recommended Eagle Peak Wilderness area. Tell us what some of the concerns were with that, Cindy.
I had been hiking out there and looking at a trail proposal. The Forest Service asked me to look over one of their projects.
That's for Three Sisters Falls.
That's to Three Sisters Waterfall. And I happened to notice going across the Sheep Camp Creek that it was absolutely filled with this dusty, dirty goo. And I wanted to make sure that it wasn't just the trail itself. And I went upstream a little bit, and sure enough, and they started bringing more dirt. And I looked and I said, there's these big piles of dirt. Gee, where do they go?
So it all
kind of came together.
Yeah, so they were polluting Boulder Creek, which feeds the spectacular Three Sisters Falls, which is truly one of the jewels in San Diego's backcountry in the proposed wilderness area. This, I assume, would have an impact on wildlife as well, right?
It would have an impact on the health of the streams, and anywhere this kind of silting is going downstream, it runs into Boulder Creek, where they've been looking at trout and other limnology water quality studies going on. So I shudder to say I'm not the person doing those studies. It was something that had the appearance of being pretty serious, and I just wanted them to go take it seriously and do something. They're the ones that are going to have to actually go out there and research what to do.
But yeah, and the soil you've mentioned also contained noxious weeds and invasive and even flammable species. That sounds pretty dangerous in the area that previously had the
big
fires.
I think I have the absolute most respect for Rick Halsey and his fire issues that I'm sure that have probably been through this magazine too. And we know that you're bringing in this dirt. We don't know where it comes from necessarily. And if it has a lot of non-native grasses and weeds, we know that they catch fire very quickly. And if it's near the roads where someone tosses a cigarette or something, it's that much more of a problem. And you can see where the grasses have gotten brown before the rest of the native vegetation already, and we're in a drought. So
anyway, after we looked at this video on the Eagle Peak Friends and Collaborators page on Facebook that you forwarded us the link to, Cindy, we contacted Supervisor Diane Jacobs' office, the elected official for this area. Her staff immediately forwarded our questions to Communications Specialist for the county, Gig Connaughton, and he responded within 24 hours. He thanked us for bringing this to the county's attention. He did confirm the dumping was related to a county Department of Public Works road maintenance project, and he told us that the county would immediately install proper erosion control on the stockpiles, which you noted, by the way, was probably in violation of multiple federal laws, including the Clean Water Act, Endangered Species Act, Forest Land Management Act, and the National Environmental Quality Act, as well as the State California Environmental Quality Act.
Those all had the appearance of being a concern. Like I said, I'm not the attorney or the judge, but by the quantities and the repetitiveness, I looked at this one more time. It had kind of gotten my attention because of the whole Three Sisters issue, and I had already been segueing with the locals out there because they have some very legitimate and very serious concerns about all that. And when I saw the piles of dirt again, it was just like, there's a pattern here, and it disappears, and it's out of sight, out of mind, but it's not a good thing.
Right.
I will tell you that the roads manager for Alpine has been really very receptive, and he's been very good to work with. He's responded very quickly in the past. I wrote him. He wrote me back. He said, let's meet. And then all of a sudden, it went quiet. And so several weeks go by, and then, again, I put these pictures together, and like you said, sometimes...
Yeah. Now, Cleveland National Forest did respond to us, Annabelle Conejo, and she did tell us that they'd been discussing with the county, you know, the need to work together better to protect water quality and other values in that national forest, but nothing happened until we made that call to the county. And then within 24 hours of when we contacted the county, you went out and took another look and tell us what you saw.
Oh, they had covered all of them with this plastic sheeting. It was a lot of plastic sheeting. Part of the concern is that the winds blow 100 miles an hour sometimes.
Right.
And the rains. And
short-term fix. So that was the 24-hour fix. Within a week after we contacted the county, you went back again, and what did you find then?
There were only two piles left, and, well, let's see, three piles, and they were all small. The two big ones had been reduced by better than half, two-thirds, and there was one small pile. So they had left themselves enough to work with. All the rest of them were gone. I would say four-fifths of what was out there was gone.
Very good. Well, congratulations. And listeners, if you want to go take a look at the before and after pictures, it's pretty dramatic. You can see it on our website at eastcountymagazine.org in our green scene section.
There is something I want to add here, because the locals were quite upset, and I don't like for them to be upset. It was hurtful to me to see that. And
Because they wanted the roads fixed.
Well, their concern is that this means that the road won't be fixed, and they're going to have to continue to deal with this. And right on cue, it rained, and it was a problem for a couple of them even getting to work. And I am very sympathetic to what they have to deal with, because all of a sudden we've had so many people discover and love the wilderness. It's a mixed blessing. And they did kind of explain that part of the problem with this repetitive stuff is they never came back and put the right surface on there. I think they were working with what they had and the budget that they had, but it's really where the people who know how to deal with roads need to use their resources and follow through. And I think a pitch for them is that that has to happen. They can't look at a few people way out in the backcountry and continue to ignore this. This is not really quite over. And I do know for sure that they have promised to schedule meetings with the Forest Service, and this won't be the end. This will be the beginning, and that's exactly what we want.
Very good. Listeners, if you've just tuned in, we've been speaking with Cindy Buxton, who is a leading environmental voice out here, about the victory that we've accomplished here in getting the county to clean up the dirt dumping along Boulder Creek Road in Cleveland National Forest in an area that is proposed for designation for wilderness, that's actually now recommended for designation for wilderness. And if you tune in to our next show, we're going to have Cindy back again, and she's going to be telling us all about the very exciting news about the impending wilderness designation and what that means and what that's going to include. Cindy, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Miriam, for all you do. We appreciate it and for having me here today.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. My guest is Carl Calvert of the Board of Directors of the Motor Transport Museum in Campo. Carl, you're back a second time because the story is so exciting. Welcome.
Thank you.
If you have not visited the Motor Transport Museum, located in a fabulous old mill, Google Motor Transport Museum on Highway 94. And women who are listening, this museum is neither pretty nor cute. It is simply amazing. So get your girlfriends, get on the computer, and then get out there and take a look. Carl, in a nutshell, what's the mission statement of the Motor Transport Museum?
Our primary interest is educational in nature, to educate people about transportation history, especially in San Diego County, because we've had a lot of it here over the years. And in addition to education, we are an area where people can come and volunteer and work and learn about automotive history and skills about how to preserve and restore vehicles. For example, people can come and learn how to weld or to do upholstery or many different types of talent, and many of our volunteers that now participate at the museum come from these fields.
So in other words, you are really made for both men and women.
Oh, yes, yes. And we have a large library of periodicals and books of history and maintenance of vehicles. That's a treasure trove of history, and people contact us from all over the country wanting information on particular aspects of maybe how to maintenance or tune up a vehicle that's antique or old.
Indeed.
And we have a wonderful library of that kind of data.
Well, this is a giant constituency right across the country, and never more so than in San Diego County.
Yes.
Now, as you are in the business of restoring vehicles that served in so many historical capacities, you've been working on one in particular that relates to Julian.
Yes.
Dates from the early 1920s. Can you share that story
Sure.
with us?
Sure. Our current project that we're just finishing with is a bus that was used as a stage to take people back and forth to Julian.
Oh.
This is our second major restoration project. Our first one was a 1912 stage built by the Mack Company, and the one we just finished now is a 1924 Cadillac. And it's taken us quite a few years to complete this restoration because it has a wooden body, and then it's covered with metal and upholstery, and you can't really see the wood in it. But it took a lot of work, woodwork type of work, to restore this vehicle. But we've restored it to where it's usable today, and we've restored it for the Julian Historical Society that actually owns it. So,
oh, my goodness. So there's wonderful cooperation between these museums in East County.
Right.
Now, you're working with skilled volunteers.
Yes.
How are you funding something like this?
Well, the Julian Historical Society has been our main source of being able to help us buy parts to be able to restore it. Our museum has furnished the labor to restore it on a volunteer basis. We've not charged for any of our work to restore this vehicle.
So this is truly loving hands at work.
It is,
I've been to the museum, and it's just a literal sea of often very exotic-looking vehicles.
Oh, yes. We have quite a number of vehicles that date back to 1912. That's our earliest vehicle. Some of these vehicles are chain drive, or they have solid rubber tires. And we have quite a collection. We are approaching 300 vehicles in our collection.
My goodness. Now, in addition to coming to the museum, people could go to the Julian Historical Society, their upcoming events,
yes,
where you would be able to see the 1924
Where they can
stage.
See these vehicles run and possibly even be able to ride in them. The Julian Historical Society has rebuilt the original building these vehicles were kept in when they were in use. It's called the Carriage House. So anybody that goes to Julian, if they're interested in seeing these vehicles, they can ask where the carriage house is and view them.
Carl, we mentioned that the Motor Transport Museum is located in an old mill.
And yes.
What is that building?
Well, in 1924, a company came to San Diego here called Standard Sanitary Manufacturing and built this building right on the railroad line to process an ore that was mined in Campo called feldspar. Feldspar is used to make porcelain, pottery, and glass mainly, but they were using this product to make sinks and bathtubs, bathroom fixtures.
Yeah.
So they built this building there to process the material, and then it was shipped out by rail to their facility in Richmond, California, where they built the bathtubs and the sinks. So the sinks were not built here.
Carl, what is the website for your museum?
Yes, motortransportmuseum.org.
What's the phone number?
619-478-2492.
Folks, you run, don't walk. It is a really amazing place.
I want to thank
you for coming by, Carl.
I've enjoyed our visit today.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning into the Sounds of History. I'm Helen O'Field.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
A small plane from Arizona made an emergency landing Saturday on Prospect Avenue in Santee, just east of Cuyamaca Street. The Piper Cherokee plane struck a pickup truck when it landed, but fortunately nobody was injured, SanteePatch.com reports. The pilot had radioed that he was having engine trouble shortly before he coasted in for a landing, causing only minor damage. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to Reel to Reel. Every show, we will bring you authentic, independent artists. I'm your host, Dean Bruce, and I sit down every show with a diverse group of musicians, not only digging deep into the grit of the music-making process, but also bringing to you the real stories of these real artists. This is Reel to Reel. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Reel to Reel. I'm here tonight with our special guest, Look Up Here. Say hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
We're going to start off with a really easy one. How did you guys start off?
All right, I'll start here.
Monkey knife fight.
TJ one night.
Good
but,
dynamic.
But you know, me and Jake have been playing together for years, and then in a couple different bands. We played in Zero to None for a while. And then we were in a band called Anthem, and just kind of always been in bands together.
Which is where we met Jeff.
Yeah, we met Jeff when we started playing in Anthem. But to backtrack from that, Paul, who's with us too, he just joined with us. We were jamming with him back when we were in Zero to None way back in the day, and kind of re-met and got him back in. And then John, we worked together for many years, and I wanted him to come out and show me his girl face, and he did. He fills in the lower frequencies quite well.
So how long have you guys have all been playing? I mean, obviously there's a lot of stories in here, but how long have you guys been playing together in this particular band?
Going on, what, 2 years? About 2 years?
Yeah, it was about 2 years. After the first year is when we finally played our first show, I think.
Yeah, we started gigging last summer. It took, it's funny, when you get older and you have kids and families and stuff, you don't play five times a week and play shows twice a weekend. You get once a weekend on Sundays when the family's asleep, and you book shows during the week when they're sleeping again.
Right.
What were your musical influences when you started off?
Classic punk, mostly. D.I., Sex Pistols, Clash.
So there's no Beethoven mixed in there. It was just straight, like, we're just going to go hardcore.
Oddly enough, I like Beethoven now. when I was growing up, no, not at all. It was Kiss, and then after that, I listened to punk rock, and that was it.
You guys started the band, I'd sound like basically out of just having different relationships with each other. And now, when you guys get together, is it that vibe? Is it you're just getting together to jam, or is it serious business? Like, you guys get in a room and it's, okay, this is what we're going to do and just get it done.
It depends. If there's like a big show or a radio recording, then we take it pretty serious. I'm like, all right, I've got to get to work, you know. But if it's just a random Sunday, we want to have some fun. Everybody shows up. We're all in good moods. And I think that's the reason why we chose to kind of play in this band together, because we play with different singers, different guys, you know, with egos and stuff. And it may be a good sounding band, but it's not fun. It becomes a job at that point. You know, you're just like, oh, you know, you got to deal with this guy, got to deal with this guy. I'm happy to say that I jam with these guys. They're my best friends.
So that brings us right into Seven. You guys are going to play that for us live tonight, which I'm super excited about. Let's go through the process of that song. Like, what did it take to get to kind of put that together?
So Seven came together as a song first. Most of our songs, we write the music first and then get a melody to it. But Seven, the music was there first, and then I sat down with some headphones and just found a melody, recorded a really bad watermelon track, which is, I just say watermelon in different pitches. it's literally just kind of get an idea.
I don't know. I think Katy Perry would buy that song.
Right?
For sure.
Yeah,
watermelon.
That's
not a keeper.
Yeah.
I love that song. Watermelon?
So yeah, we started with the music, and then just kind of, it's funny too, we always say like, oh, let's just do the basics and then we'll polish it later. And almost never we ever polish it. We are, nope, keep it the same. That's how we wrote it. Let's just keep going with that. We do little parts here and there.
Well, I'm really excited about this, and I'm going to let you guys take over now and take us into Seven. For those of you that are just tuning in, I'm sitting here with Look Up Here. So that was Seven, and it was awesome, guys. I really appreciate you coming in tonight and doing that for us. Now, is that song on your CD that you guys are just finishing up right now?
Yes, it should be a wrap up here soon, hitting the internet world, called EP Be Home Soon. because that's pretty much what we all text our significant others when we're at band practice.
Well, that's a perfect name, though, right? Just to kind of do some shameless plugging, where can we find you at right now on the internet?
Yeah, we're on the good old Facebook, facebook.com/lookupheremusic.
Music.
And look for our Set It Right, I guess, single. That's going to be our single. And it should be on there. So go take a listen to us and write us a note, add us, whatever.
And the album name again?
Album name, Be Home Soon, should be online September 10th.
September 10th. So, you know, look for that on your local digital music store, hopefully in iTunes, anywhere else. And again, facebook.com/lookupheremusic.
Guys, thank you very much.
Thank you for having us. Thanks for having us. A lot of fun.
Again, this is your host, Dean Bruce, and this has been Reel to Reel.
Reel to Reel is recorded on location at San Diego Performance Academy with help of studio producer Dave Bramley, executive producer Jerry Dean, engineer Levi Wong. If you would like to appear on the show, check us out at www.reeltoreelsessions.com, facebook.com/reeltoreelsessions, or you can email us at info@reeltoreelsessions.com. Title music provided by Look Up Here.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine on KNSJ. With the threat of wildfires across multiple states, the nonprofit Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, or FLASH, offers wildfire prevention tips for residents. You can protect your home and prepare your family for wildfires. Remember, embers can be blown more than a mile from the flame, so it is critical to take action to make your home wildfire resilient. Here are some ways to prepare your family. Have a fire disaster plan, including at least 2 predetermined evacuation routes, a NOAA weather radio, and disaster kit for your family. Follow any and all evacuation orders immediately. Here are some other ways you can protect your home. Identify an emergency water supply within 1,000 feet of your home through one of the following: community water hydrant system, drafting site on a lake, cooperative emergency storage tank with neighbors, or a swimming pool. Remove fuels that can lead flames to your home or that can become ignited from wind-blown embers, including dead grass, leaves, and branches within 30 feet of buildings. Dry leaves and litter from roofs, rain gutters, decks, and walkways, dead and dry litter at the base of plants, tree branches within 6 to 10 feet off the ground, firewood within 30 feet of buildings, and continuous beds of combustible vegetation on the ground or in treetops that can bring large flames within 100 feet of your home. Clean your gutters, eaves, and roof to make sure they are clear of debris. Plant species that retain moisture and resist ignition, including native fire-resistant vegetation. You can check with your local forestry agency for this. Fire-prone trees and shrubs away from your home and far enough apart so they won't ignite one another. Make sure your street number is legible and clearly marked for emergency responders. Move any storage sheds, including lawnmowers, grills, gas cans, and tanks, away from your home. Before a threat, landscape with fire-resistant native plant species that retain moisture and resist ignition. Install metal screening that blocks embers from entering your buildings, including non-combustible attic crawl space vents and around low decks, non-combustible skirting around mobile homes, and if under a wildfire threat, only remove dead leaves or vegetation when local garbage collection services will have time to pick up the debris. Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, or FLASH, is a nonprofit organization and is a consumer advocacy group for strengthening homes and safeguarding families from natural and man-made disasters. For more information on wildfire prevention, visit www.flash.org or www.protectyourhome.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.